Good afternoon, and welcome to Strategies for Reducing IT Costs Without Compromising Service, a Health System CIO Media Inc. production sponsored by HealthLink Advisors. Just a little housekeeping before we get started. My name is Anthony Guerra. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of Health System CIO, and I'll be your moderator today. We're looking forward to your participation. You can send in your questions or comments at any time in the Q&A box, and we'll take them later in the program. Just so you see how we're going to spend our time today, first we're going to go about 35, 40 minutes with our main panel discussion featuring Brian Strood, VP and CIO at Faith Regional Health Services, James Wellman, VP and CIO at Nathan Litauer Hospital and Nursing Home, and Lindsay Jarrell, CEO at HealthLink Advisors. So let's jump right in. Brian, we're going to start with you. Can you give us an overview of your organization and your role?
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. So like you said, I'm VP CIO of Faith Regional Health Services. So we're located in Northeast Nebraska, serve a pretty wide geography up in the Northeast section of the state, at clinics, multi-specialty clinic, employed clinic practices, as well as a hospital, serve the gamut in terms of a nursing home as well, assisted living. So serve most everything in the continuum of care and for quite a few people in rural Northeast Nebraska.
Excellent, Brian. Thank you. James?
Yes. So James Wellman, I'm the VP CIO at Nathan Litauer Hospital. We are in Fulton County, which is upstate New York. We are the only hospital there, an 85-bed facility, multiple clinics in the region. So we serve a lot of those things, as well as a nursing home that we actually have attached to our primary care facility. So that's kind of a throwback from the days of old, but it's working really well, and I kind of like it.
Very good, James. Lindsay?
Yeah, thanks again, Anthony. And Lindsay Jarrell, I lead the HealthLink Advisors team. We are a team of about 120 professional consultants, very much focused in IT advisory and Office of the CIO work. We also do a little bit of implementation work and program management, interim leadership work as well.
Excellent. All right. Very good. Let's get right into it. Brian, we're going to start with you. How would you describe the financial climate in health systems today and describe the pressure that IT departments are under to either not increase budgets or reduce them, if that is in fact the case?
The financial climate really couldn't be more challenging, to be honest. So when you think about increasing costs across for anybody, but in healthcare, our primary expense is related to wages, and those costs continue to go up. We have situations where there may be contract workers, those sorts of things. So our overall expenses have gone up, as well as I'm sure just about anybody in the country. Combining that with lowered reimbursement, so payer mix for us has been a pretty significant challenge. So when you look at, it's really a tough equation to solve. Our volumes were in 2023 were great, but due to increases in expenses and lowering reimbursement, really made things tight. I've been here for 11 years. Our last budget cycle was fairly challenging in terms of trying to come up with a budget we thought we could live with for 2024. And part of that has to do with then, as you said, it does involve making difficult decisions as it relates to IT expenses, and some of those probably more challenging than we've had to. So I mean, I don't want to necessarily get into all those right now. I'm sure there's other questions, but it's certainly an issue, and had to triage, I guess, and assign some level of priority to those IT expenses.
All right. So it is certain we're not overstating the case. James, your thoughts?
So in the wake of what Brian said, obviously we're facing a lot of expensive, our payer mix is changed dramatically over COVID. We've seen that a lot in this area. We've also seen a huge increase in everybody's overall salaries. It's drawing down on us. And at the end of the day, no one's coming in and saying, hey, we're giving you this much more money. And we're also challenges with, can we use IT to, if we're going to increase the budget, And we'll start talking about this a little bit more, but what's the ROI? And a hard ROI, not a soft ROI. Can we make that difference? In our case, we're projecting, you know, a significant shortfall this year, and we're working hard to make that change. So we will make investments in the IT that can have a good, relatable difference in the way we run operations on in the IT department and in the organization as a whole. So fortunately, we look at this, that it is not an outright cut, but a wise conversation, or maybe the timing to coordinate it with our cash flow. That's a really important component as well. We don't want to front load or back load our budget. So we're trying to look at those things and do that accordingly too.
Very good, James. Lindsay, your thoughts?
Yeah, in the conversations we're having with clients all over, it mirrors what we also see in Kaufman Hall's flash report. So Kaufman Hall's another advisory firm, does a lot on the cost side and capital and operational planning, and they publish a monthly flash report on hospital economics and profitability. And call me a nerd, but I love to read that flash report every month. And what's so interesting in that to me is it shows a nice recovery at the top aggregate level of hospital margin in the U.S. But then when you go into the regions, it's a completely different story. You've got some mega regions that are just driving 8, 10% operating margins. But most of the world is still zero or negative, especially when you get 500 beds or less and you're not in one of these big MSAs. And, and that's the vast majority of folks. They're still very much just trying to figure it out and watch volume and mix and payer contracts very carefully. So I think there's some folks who are doing fine, but that doesn't really represent the vast majority of hospital and operations going on right now.
All right, very good. So things are tight, things are tough. So the people that we're trying to help are saying, yep, yes, that's accurate, and we feel the same way. So that's some good level setting there. James, we're going to start with you on this. What are some of the first places healthcare IT professionals can look when they need to cut costs, the so-called low-hanging fruit?
So one of the ways I like to approach this is rather than come into the saying we're going to cut out this or cut out that and get rid of certain services, but is to really drive down and look at your overall IT operations. And what we want to cut is systemic waste. We have come in and found that, are these things that we're using, are these, do we need so many, we need 25 of this when 12 will do. So we're starting to look at the overall operations in that. And it's amazing that some of the things you can get rid of, even down to the point of reviewing your contracts. I've been at multiple facilities in my career, and it surprises me still that I go in and I see redundant contracts or contracts that we're paying for products that we've sunsetted maybe a year ago, 18 months ago. So those are quick wins sometimes. If you're extremely efficient in that regard, obviously, you're going to move on to some other things, but we're starting to extend the life of our hardware. And that's a balancing act because we don't want to let the technology stack get so old that it now becomes a huge weak point for us, especially in today's cybersecurity areas. But I'm really big on operations first, tech last. And if we know our operations and everything is working as intended and we're effective as we can be, that makes our support easier. It makes our cost management easier. So that's our first place that we always start.
James, quick follow-up. You mentioned finding you're paying for things that have been sunsetted. How does that happen from a process point of view, and how do you prevent that from happening?
So a lot of times if you're looking at your overall structure and your projects, in my experience, what I've seen is we've gone in, we put the project in, we're successful, we celebrated, but twofold thing you have to do there. Sometimes you're making a known decision to put a new product in while the other product is still under contract and you're sunsetting it. But then it's a busy world and it's been really hectic the last few years. And it sometimes just slips off the plate. So if you don't have a good tracking process or a project structure that lets you go back and close those out, they sometimes slip. You've also had a lot of transitions, or in every organization, it's different. Who's responsible for those contracts and making sure that we did close them? And I've seen some challenges up front where maybe we didn't do the homework and understand the contract that we have. And I've seen this happen quite a bit, where they decide to go with a new product, but they did not properly stop the old contract in a necessary number of days. So they're eating that for another year, and then they kind of forget about it, and it becomes the norm, and they start signing things on their desk because of all the other pressures and noise coming in from everywhere, and it happens. So I would definitely advise you to stop, take a look, review those things, and make sure that they're all up to date.
All right. Very good. Lindsay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I, you know, just want to agree with everything that James said. And the some of the other things that we see a lot in this space, and we'll talk a little bit more about this role later, but having someone in IT department who is essentially the internal CFO of IT. Now, that may be a senior analyst, it may be a manager, it may be a director. You just kind of make it work, but they know everything going on at the detailed level. And that, of course, overlaps directly with contracts, what James was just saying. You know, last year and even into this year, we've been helping clients identify all those subscription contracts that were signed in an emergency during COVID that had the first initial term that's coming up, right? It's amazing how many of those now have the renewal language you need to hit perfectly in order to cancel them, or the termination language, I should say. And it's a great example of what James was talking about there. The overspend, Anthony, that you asked about in terms of sunset systems, I just can't stress enough being in the minute detail of the contracts and all of the vendor payments going out. Because that happens. We were just working last week and helped a client discover massive opportunities in hardware maintenance. So, you know, they had hardware, they used it for 3 years. They decided to go buy aftermarket maintenance on that hardware to get more life out of it. And they were still paying aftermarket hardware maintenance in years 6 and 7 and no longer using the hardware. And those things just happen, right? People are busy. You don't see invoices at the line item level. So now that can also be kind of a smaller piece of the pie, right? We may be talking increments of 5 or 10,000. I guess the real point is here, we need that kind of discipline, though, all throughout managing our finances. We'll talk a little bit more about some other ideas as well. But I think James is just spot on with what he was talking about there.
Hey, and if I might, may add one other thing in that. When you're reviewing those, look at your CPIs and those annual cost indexes. You know, I don't accept a 7%. I have honest conversations with those vendors at that time. And so that's a great time for you to come back and say, let's put something reasonable we can both afford. You got to make money. We have to make money. But, you know, I can't afford 7% increases on all our vendors coming back to us. We're getting less money, not more. So yeah, that's a great time to have that conversation, too, and maybe work out a more favorable contract.
Lindsay, quick follow-up to you. Talk a little bit more about this concept of being careful around termination language and perhaps auto-renew, contracts that auto-renew annually, meaning I don't have to opt in, it's going to auto-renew. So if no one's paying attention, that's going to go on forever.
Yeah, and I'll answer it this way. In our experience, right, just touching a lot of different clients, everybody has a contract management system today. In fact, most people have three of them because supply chain has one and finance has one and IT has one. And just rationalizing your contract management systems and getting that nailed down and then having really good hygiene around how the contracts are loaded so the right people are notified at the right time for renewal language is very important. But this is real life and everything can't be perfect and organizations get very busy and that's often not a top priority for folks. So that's where I come back to, you really have to have that czar inside of IT who knows these things cold, even if supply chain is responsible for contracts. It's a double check and allows you to really maintain that because vendors are very happy to take those auto renewals after initial term. And those auto renewals after initial term often come with a substantial price increase that you have no say about. So back to the previous point, right? It's, these things are things we've been talking about for years, but we still find them day in and day out.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, trying to be additive to the conversation here, because I totally agree with the application rationalization points that have been made, extending the life of things. And maybe we'll come back to that a little bit. But allowed me the opportunity to have them go first to think about some other things that I hadn't thought about. So some of the things I would say that we've noticed are things like bundled. When you're buying something up front, it seems like a great idea to bundle many things into that purchase, especially if it's a large purchase. But there's risks associated with then you're losing that value if you don't actually get them all implemented right away. So there's times where you might buy a bundle of things from a vendor and that sounds like a great idea, and maybe you get a quote unquote better deal. But if you don't get them implemented and start realizing value all at the same time, then you're sort of wasting that money. So I'm trying to be more pragmatic about, hey, what's realistic? What are we going to do right away? What might be a phase two? And then either maybe locking the pricing in, that's wise, but not having it incurred until you're ready to start using it. So there's some things like that I've noticed over the years. The gentleman made me think about out clauses. So I'll say, I tell people all the time, I work on some policy stuff as well. And policies and contracts are probably my least favorite things to do. But because they're important, I've had to learn how to get better at them and learn how to get more skilled at the things that I'm doing. And one of those is out clauses. And it's oftentimes can be back and forth with a vendor. They're saying, hey, we're going to provide a great product for you. Why are we talking about this out clause? And the fact of the matter is, I've been around long enough to know those out clauses are important. And lots of times I think a vendor is going to be fantastic and they aren't. And I've got to figure that out. So by that, I mean, how much notice do I have to give you? If I give you so much X number of notice, am I still on the hook to pay for some of those things to help prevent some of these auto renew problems that Lindsay mentioned? And then the last thing that I'll say that we've gotten more skilled at is being more realistic about what we can accomplish. So I'm a very aggressive person by nature, really want to get everything done for the organization and provide all this value. And we've had to be more realistic about what can we actually get done and sort of rationalize our project portfolio and reduce it and ask the business to make decisions. Here's what we think we can get done. If you had to trade this for this, which would you like to do? Or if you had to make these other exchanges, and the business has been responsive to that. So instead of trying to do everything for everyone, through our governance process, our IT steering process, we've been able to allow that governance process to make those tough decisions and get us to something that's more realistic that we can accomplish. So those are the kinds of things that I thought about.
Anthony, if you don't mind, I'd like
go ahead,
to
please
add
go ahead.
One more thing. I know we're heavy on contracts at the moment, but something Brian was just mentioning made me think of a recent example, and I'd just like to share it with the group. Bundling. And so, as Brian said, sometimes that's the right move, right? But then when you get to the situation when you're bundling, particularly from a software vendor, the line item detail disappears, and all of a sudden you just have a magic price. And they say, well, we can't give you the line item pricing on this now because I put in a master discount at the top level, and I can't show you those discounted rights because then I'd have to give it to somebody else. Okay, fine. If you can't get them to give you the line item detail in a quote bundle deal, that's life sometimes. But at least get them to say at renewal, if I don't want to buy all those seven pieces again, how much money are you going to take off if I take off piece 5, 6, and 7? And so they may not be giving you to the price today, but at least you know what your cancellation is on part of the bundle in the future. I'm sure folks who do this day in and day out know what I'm talking about there, but that's a game they play because then they can hide the details, the underlying details, and then you don't have any leverage when it comes to renewal time if you need to reconfigure the bundle. So just something to keep in mind.
Okay.
That sounds like a great piece of insider advice, Lindsay. So thank you for sharing that. Brian, I just want to follow up with you on something you were saying. Two things. One is you talked about out clauses. You talked about quite a bit of back and forth with the vendor. And I wanted to get your thoughts on working with your internal legal counsel hold on 1 second. Okay. Working with your internal legal counsel and how to do that efficiently. I assume that's a huge part of this whole thing, is working with your legal representation. And the other thing is you mentioned how a vendor may sometimes sort of chide you or give you a hard time, like, oh, why are you so focused on getting out of this when we're just getting into it? We're trying to build a relationship. That to me would be a red flag. Like, you're trying to make me feel guilty for checking in this. So just real quick on those two things.
So the first one, so from a legal perspective and depending on the structure, we try to be efficient with what we put in front of our legal folks, because that costs a significant amount of dollars, whether you're paying that or it's part of your employment. It's still a resource that's highly expensive. But I will say that it pays off in the long run. So I know there's certain things that we all know that we can scrutinize from a contract perspective before we even put it in front of our lawyers. So I try to do all those sorts of things and get it down to the things that allows them to operate at the top of their license, so to speak, and get them to be able to provide the information that's the most effective to us. And I'm more liberal about what I put in front of them now, because it's, you know, even if a contract or two requires very little from them, it's that third one or that fifth one that does. And so there's definitely sound reason to put more in front of them rather than less. The second part of the conversation is, yeah, I totally agree. It's a complete red flag. And the answer to them is, if you're so confident you're going to provide me a great service, then it shouldn't matter what I put in this out clause, because I'm going to be so delighted it won't matter. That's kind of my response to that. It doesn't always work, but it is, you know, they wouldn't be so concerned about it if they knew it never would be engaged.
Amen. All right. Very good. Let's go to our next question. And this is, where we go to second level. So Lindsay, I want to start with you on this. After the low hanging fruit has been picked, what are some next level areas to cut or ways to cut costs? The concept of employees, I assume that's not your first go-to, unless maybe there's somebody who you wouldn't mind seeing exit the organization. And then trade-offs, the hard trade-offs that have to be made when you're doing second-level cutting, that concept of, you know, it's easy to cut fat, but harder to cut muscle and bone, but maybe sometimes you have to do it. Your thoughts, Lindsay?
Yeah, a couple different things. I'll actually start one that's more kind of looking to the future, and that is managing the costs in the future. This overlaps a little bit with what we've been talking about, but specifically around new cloud service contracts and pricing methodologies. I'll say the same thing about all the cloud providers, like I do about Microsoft and Oracle. They literally have hundreds of people who work in licensing and pricing, and this is all they focus on, is how to maximize revenue and turn it into margin. That doesn't mean they're bad people. That's just their job. They're supposed to return value to shareholders. And we've often got one CIO or a director who's really good at contracts trying to work against that. But around cloud and that offering, they're making how you burn, or essentially the money you spend, can really get you into trouble if you don't stay on top of your cloud licensing and your use of assets in that cloud architecture. So that's a little bit more looking forward, not cutting today, but you've really got to stay on top of some of this new pricing that's coming out. The other couple of points I'll make is, when we see kind of the next level, right, what are people looking at? I know outsourcing is pretty obvious. We're seeing it both at the aggregate IT outsourcing level, but we're seeing it a lot also at the niche level, help desk, certain application support in specific areas. We are kind of neutral on that in terms of cost savings, because we believe that a really well-run IT operation, if you can get the right skills in the seats to lead the team, can achieve the same thing. And you don't have to pay the 20 or 25% margin to the outsourcers. But sometimes that's just necessary, either for speed or because of skills. So that outsourcing is definitely the next level that folks are looking at. And then we've seen a, I can't call it a trend because, we've literally seen it like four times now. But independent facilities outside, and by that I mean hospitals or little kind of mini health systems, independent facilities outside of big MSAs are teaming together and combining services. So maybe in the, just a silly example, but maybe James and Brian, they don't compete against each other. Let's imagine they were in the same time zone and they're both wanting to stay independent, remain independent. They both happen to run the same EHR and revenue cycle system. Is there a way they could come together and share application support with those analysts, help with call coverage, because one person takes call every weekend, right? And so we've started to see some of that happening, and it's really just up to those two orgs to make that happen. We're seeing that happen under the kind of the guise of how organizations have worked together in the past with kind of shared GPO contracts. I'm a proponent of that, right? I think there's some maybe rules of the road to go along with it. Like, you couldn't compete and do that effectively, I don't think. And you couldn't necessarily do it effectively if you ran different systems. But there's likely some savings there if you can work together that are interesting. And I'd like to see more of that in the market. I think that's another, another path to potentially take where you could get some savings out of it.
All right. Very good. Brian, next level cutting.
Yeah, I think, cutting employees is the last thing for us and for many probably. It's been so challenging to, we've experienced turnover. I think the world has changed a little bit in terms of there's more remote opportunities. And even though you see things and read things about some of those opportunities changing course a little bit, I don't think they'll ever go away in IT. I think there'll always be some capacity where that remote's going to be available. So that's created a competition that isn't otherwise or hadn't historically been something we were vulnerable to, being in the rural Midwest. But now with remote opportunities, it does change things. So we are certainly not, that's certainly the last thing we would ever consider. As such, and as Lindsay kind of mentioned, due to some staff turnover and some ability to find the right skill set at the right time, and we have selectively outsourced certain things. We have outsourced our first call service desk for a number of years, probably 6 or 7 years. And that's been beneficial in the context of not having to provide 24/7 coverage for those sorts of things. And that's proven to be a success or by and large. And then, like I said, in certain instances when we've had open positions and turnover, we can outsource. And then when we find the right resource, the right skills in our area, then we can actually bring them on. And we have the contracts structured in a way that we can exit them quickly enough and onboard somebody. So it gives us the ability to sort of have either one at the time that we need it. So I'd agree with most of what he said, and that's how we've gone about it. And layoffs are just not something that we ever want to talk about here, to be honest.
Brian, quick follow-up. You talk about outsourcing, and I think what you're alluding to is structuring any outsourcing agreement to give you flexibility. So perhaps, and I don't know if you can do this, perhaps you're saying if the individual you're engaged with is sort of very attractive in terms of their performance, you might be able to hire them. Or perhaps if you find someone who can do the work that you had been outsourcing, you can hire that person. So Is that what you're trying to say, that you want as much flexibility as possible with these outsourcing arrangements?
Yeah, it's really the latter. I don't know that I don't know how many places would agree to be any sort of scenario where you could end up hiring the resource that you were outsourced to. I think if folks can find that, they should capitalize on it. But typically, that's not a possibility. But I'm more looking at structuring our exit or reduction in the contract in such a way that if I encounter somebody new moves to the area, or we discover somebody that we're able to hire on direct, that we could then immediately reduce, not immediate, probably not the right word, but we can within a short amount of time reduce our contract in such a way that we can bring that person on board and we're not handcuffed where we have to pass on that resource because we're already in a contract. So mostly it's the latter, what you talked about.
It makes a lot of sense. James, your thoughts?
So it's interesting when I hear the other conversations here, come all over the map. So I've been on both sides of the fence. I've been an outsourced resource that I worked at for several years. And for me, I know it works in certain locations, but where we are, the idea of just saying we're going to go in and cut people and or can take them on outsourcing is not even on the table for a conversation. But what we are looking at, and kind of what Brian alluded to, is started being we don't have enough people, and hiring people in and we're local. There's a lot of stuff we have to consider. So what we started looking at is like, hey, maybe this service, two things. We don't need a full-time person doing this, and the person we have assigned, we're reassigning and working with them to go and do other areas or work in other areas. And we might go to a fractional type person to do some of that work. So in our case, we're saying, hey, I just need X number of hours, in which case I can contract with the person or a service and say, I'll call you as needed, and I'll only need so many hours per month that I can do this. And so it's not a full time, I'm not paying all those benefits, I'm not paying those things. So that part can work out. And we always try to keep the people in here. So I always avoid just saying cutting three bodies off of the tech staff isn't going to help anything, because to me, the down level or the downstream impact is too great, because now I'm essentially overworking the people who are there. Our service has dropped. We're not giving them what we've offered. So it's to my opinion, it's a really easy one to go in and defend and say not do that. Does it mean that not every organization, there could be a little bit of fluff maybe in some places? So you have to look at that component of the operation. But I'm all about resourcing, retraining, or reapplying them somewhere else. But today's market, there's been so much turnover, it's just hard to get people in the door. And if you're in my case, you know, I don't have a whole lot of people that are moving to this area that have this skill set that I need. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a last resource thing. And Lindsay touched on something that was really interesting, because I've been involved in this in a couple ways. And first, you know, I've shared resources with people before in other areas that are on a similar system that I am. But now we're actually having conversations with what I would call them our frenemies, people that historically we might have competed against, but we had a relationship with. This is becoming a matter of survival in some of these areas. So we're looking at some joint ventures together and how we can support some of these same systems. Maybe we share, you know, an interface analyst, or maybe we share a specific, you know, analytics type person. Those are some of the things that can help us. Obviously, there needs to be a lot of work done, you know, with your administrative teams to make sure the trade secrets aren't flowing back and forth, so to speak. But I'm seeing that open up a little bit more. And that's relatively new, because as Lindsay said, you know, it's incredibly rare for competitors to share actual resources like that. It's one thing to go on in a joint venture in a clinic. It's wholly different to have, you know, a shared IT team supporting two hospitals. So that started to come up a little bit.
I love to hear that, because I used to work for, when I worked at Baycare Health System, the CEO there would constantly tell me, you know, there are some things that are below the competitive level. So go talk to the people we compete against across, you know, across the street, and share all the data we need to, because that's not fair to the patients, right? And I often think back to that, you know, what he taught me around that. I think there's a lot we do in IT that just doesn't belong at the competition level. So I love hearing that.
I want to go into this a little bit more. And I'd like to get from James and Lindsay and Brian, I'll come to you on if you have any thoughts on this. The concept that Lindsay's alluded to, the concept that James talked about, the frenemies thing, you have one that was Lindsay was talking about, which was not competitors at all. Same time zone, maybe same vendor, you know, EMR vendor type thing. So some similarities, but not competitors. James is talking about sort of one level beyond, which is even a frenemies situation. You have this concept of where we compete, where we don't trade secrets, these kind of thing. James, I think you said you've dipped your toe into these conversations, and I wonder if you have any advice or lessons learned so far. People on the call that are hearing this that say, that sounds really interesting. Is there any advice you can give them about things to watch out for, things to keep in mind? Here's something I learned so far.
Yeah, so, and Ratchet, just to touch on what Lindsay just said, at the end of the day, why are we here? We're here to provide a service. We're part of healthcare. That is our ultimate goal in what we're doing. And we're not going to do anybody any good by, you know, a throat cutting competition against somebody else who's suffering the same woes that we are. So when we work together, I think there's room to share. There's room to come in here. That's going to take a cultural shift. We've had a pretty big shift in the region where I am. I am new to this area. I haven't been here yet a year, and I'm part of that transitional shift. And so our CEOs are having conversations in the region about how that can work. And, you know, they're doing a lot of the heavy lift, but they're coming to us with honest conversation about how can we support. So again, I'll use Brian. If Brian was in the town next to me and we're on the same system, you know, those are the conversations that we could have. Be transparent. I mean, here's what I need. Here's what I'm trying to get. And in many cases, you know, at some point in time, quit trading people back and forth. I've watched people jump back and forth for a dollar, and it's not helping anybody. So, you know, we've got to kind of stop that bit. That I kind of think that's a little bit nonsense. And I understand that a great opportunity for somebody. And if they can go to the competitor and they have a fantastic opportunity of promotion and they're a great employee with us, I'll write the recommendation letter. But when I'm watching, you know, an entry level tech jump back and forth two or three times, I want to put a stop to that and say, how can we share this and look at the regions? In many cases, we're all in the same regions. We're all in the same cities and small towns. And we might have a clinic across from each other. And I'm like, look, you know, can you take care of the basic computer stuff there? And I'll take care of it here. And that way my guys aren't driving to that and your people aren't moving to here. And there's just more efficiencies. And we can talk about that. Shared help desks, I think, are a fantastic opportunity to do that together. So this is a way for economies of scale. And if we can all join together, we have health associations here. And so we can spread beyond and stay in this region, and we can share resources in that health, in a health association like that. We can even cross over, in certain cases, we can cross over EMRs. It doesn't matter who's on Meditech or Cerner or whatever. So some of those resources cross either way.
Lindsay, any further advice for people that are intrigued by this concept?
Well, we're actually working on a couple of these engagements right now. And one of the things that, as we're working in the midst of these engagements and doing the financial forecast of where the savings are going to come from, it's a lot about the future, right? So I don't know that you could arrive with this idea, talk to a frenemy or a non-competitor and immediately see savings, right? But when you look at 1, 2, and 3 years, it makes a lot of sense. So I think I would say, take a long view of this, take a 3-year view, and incrementally work upstream a little bit at a time, because you'll build shared vision, you'll build trust, you'll learn each other's policies and work and systems, because it's complex to get it started. You know, I think James alluded to that, even just protecting restricted information, being careful about employee rights and what's communicated to them, but it's all completely possible. And just add on a little bit more about, you know, looking to the future. If you think about, you know, gosh, I know we're going to need a new service desk system sometime in the next 24 months, or I've been told by my chief nursing officer, we absolutely have to do something about the dietary system. So we're going to be replacing our dietary, or maybe it's facilities management, right? There's a lot of these kind of non-primary systems that will be hitting our radars in the next 3 to 5 years. And a simple conversation that says, hey, facility B or C, are you dealing with the same thing? Can we go to market together? Can we look at this? Maybe you're not signing one contract, but you could certainly negotiate together and assign one project manager to get it all in, right? Those kinds of little incremental benefits over the next 3 to 5 years, I think could really pay off for our community health systems. But, you know, it's a new way to think about it and to operate.
Brian, any thoughts on what you're hearing here?
Yeah, just a couple quick thoughts. In one case, we do actually have a scenario like this. It's not so much shared, but it's providing IT services for a facility in such a way that we possess the knowledge and the skills and ability to do all those things, and they don't have to employ all those folks. And so we deliver it as a service. So we do have actually one example where it's not so much shared, but we are the IT staff for another organization, and it has gone on for 5 or 6 years probably. So I think there's a win there and a way to look at that relationship. The other one I'll say on the kind of the other end of the spectrum was we have looked at some circumstances where sharing resources, and I'm much like James and Lindsay, I'm very much interested in doing that. I think there's economies of scale. There's ways we can do it. Historically, I always use this analogy. Everybody's interested in losing 10 pounds, but only so many people are committed to losing 10 pounds. So historically, we've seen a lot of interest and haven't been able to translate that into commitment. I think some of the financial pressures that we're having now may result in James mentioned these are only recent, some of them are very recent conversations. I think revisiting some of the conversations I've had years ago, maybe have enough pressure now to make them happen. But that's been the in terms of the shared, that's been my experience in the shared resources.
Brian, I was reminded of the chicken and the pig. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Are you committed to breakfast like the chicken, or are you committed to breakfast like the pig? Right. And so we've got to be committed and see if we can make it work.
Right.
Very good. Very good. All right. I want to get an audience question in here from our good friend and former CIO, Todd Richardson. Are you all doing any chargebacks or showbacks to operational departments so that they can help with justification and accountability for costs? James, any thoughts on that?
So we're not actually doing the chargebacks, but what we are introducing is tracking all of that work to try to show the value. Mm-hmm. And understand that. And that goes back in that we have to improve our overall our help desk, so that we understand that the work that we're doing. I've lived in both environments. In fact, I started out in that environment and everything I did was a chargeback to the department. At a smaller organization like ours, I'm just taking it out of one hand and putting it in the other to a degree. So what we're asking for is operational efficiency, to use the time and the people wisely, as opposed to sometimes I've seen it used punitively where they do the chargebacks, and I don't want to introduce that.
Ryan?
Well, first of all, it's awesome to hear from Todd. That's great that he submitted a question. He's a fellow Nebraska guy in some ways with me. We aren't necessarily, I haven't historically. I think when we look at our contractual relationship, we are doing things like that because we have to. So we kind of have, a little bit of our toe in that water. And then we leverage and use our IT governance process through our IT steering committee. And it's sort of, it's not a chargeback or showback, but it's definitely all of our senior management team sits on that committee, and we make decisions about where IT spends our time. So that's not, I know, exactly the same thing, but it certainly, we take it at the direction of the organization where we should be spending our time.
Lindsay, any thoughts on this, on Todd's question?
I think I'll just emphasize what Brian said. Brian, if you don't mind, that When we get asked that question, and because people are interested in building that model, we ask them to start with labor capacity. So how many people do we have? How do they spend their time? How much time do we have available for projects, for maintenance, break fix work, right? Because you need to build muscle and be good at the discipline of how much labor capacity do I have? How do I use it? And begin to inform your business partners about that. That kind of conversation is robust and rich with your business partners. And then when they realize they only have 32,000 hours a year for project work in the IT department, and now they prioritize to those 32,000 hours, it just builds a really solid foundation that then can allow kind of the charge back if that's really where you want to go, because it's more disciplined thinking for business and for IT. So that's generally the way we approach it. Love Brian's comments on that.
All right, very good. I want to go to my favorite segment, the Ask a Co-Panelist section. Lindsay, I want to give you an opportunity to ask one or both of your co-panelists a question.
I maybe just open it up to either one of you who want to answer. When you all think about service and consultants, right? So you've got a lot of folks calling on you. When they show up with the latest and greatest idea, what's the best way to approach you with that? Or maybe on the flip side of that, what's the most frustrating calls you get from a consultant who's got the next best idea?
James, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I'll jump in. So I asked for this to come in here just so I was bringing people in. I think one of the things we talk about this all the time, be prepared to play the long game a little bit. It's a relationship. If I have an immediate need for you for that latest and greatest thing, I'm reaching out. The team's reaching out. We're going to come out in here. And I'm in an organization, and many of us in these small organizations, it's really tough to take advantage of that latest and greatest. But what I'm looking for is that relationship, that trust, so that, you know, when you send me something, it's not lost in the other 60 emails that just popped up. I go, oh, Lindsay sent me something. I've had the relationship with him. He knows that, you know, I'm not going to just look at fluffy stuff to do this one. Otherwise, you fall into a shiny object syndrome kind of thing, and it gets out of here. So I honestly rarely ever respond to those, whether they're just cold call emails or LinkedIn. There's a few here and there that stand out specifically in how they reached out to me, but primarily build the relationship, be prepared for the long game. And the long game can sometimes take a few years. But I've watched a few years turn into a multi-million-dollar contract before on numerous occasions. And I think that's a big part of it. And you on the same time are assessing it. Vendor management is actually just relationships and a skill that, you know, as a CIO that you have to develop, or as a director, you should start working on to do those. Those are all important things for us to assess us as well. Because you have generally a good idea of what our response will be, or if you're just shooting in the dark. So,
yeah,
for me to start working on the long game, play the relationship, and I'll reach out to you normally if it's something super hot that I got to have.
Ryan?
Yeah, excuse me. I totally agree with what you said. Everything's about relationships. I'm going to ask a quick question of James. So have you ever bought anything from a cold call?
I think one time, like literally one time, and all of it was a freak of timing, and it ended up forming into a huge relationship when I was at another hospital, but that was the 1% deal. This person happened to call me, and I misread the number and picked up the phone. And that was like... I'll be in it. I was like, oh, I'm just now researching this question. So it was just crazy fortuitous, but otherwise, no.
But it was luck.
Yeah.
I've never bought anything through that. But to your point, there's people that I've known that I didn't buy anything from for years. And then when I had the need, I knew them, I trusted them. And so it just underscores the relationship side of it.
And you've done that countless times, I'm assuming, because I know I have.
Yep.
James, I hope that wasn't that person's first attempt at selling, because then they think, this is easy.
Yeah. No, we talked about it quite a bit and what a fluke that it was. I mean, it was pretty bizarre, but yeah, the stars aligned.
All right. Very good. Brian, you kind of got a question in there. So let's go to James and see if he has a question. And then I'll come back to you, Brian, so you have another one. James, do you have a question for one or both of your co-panelists?
So I think it's on the – this is one of the things that we run into right now is everybody's wanting to make investment. You know, I hear AI. I think if I'd sit in an hour conversation at HIMSS recently, I'd hear it 75 times during the hour. How do you get through all of the noise that comes in here to talk about what's a meaningful investment in technology, or how do you all, you know, what's your foundation for starting those things out or in approaching that to say, is this something we can use in our organization? Just because you worked at a really large healthcare system, I struggle sometimes to translate that down to a small health system. I've worked at both, and it's just a very different beast.
Ryan, let's go to you first.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me and similar sized organizations, it's all about, you know, we're gonna work through our core vendors first. So what kind of things are, you know, whether whoever that is, whether that's your EMR, ERP vendors, and are they going to have anything that's additive or partners that can produce? But at the end of the day, it's going to be some sort of off the shelf product. We're not going to go develop our own large language models. We're not going to go do, you know, those sorts of things. So it's trying to the best that we can to stick with our core vendors. What are they offering? Who are they partnering with? So we're just even, you know, in the things that are already established, again, you know, depending on your organization, we're not going to be out on the bleeding edge. So we're looking for things that are established, like ambient listening. I mean, there's a pretty established use case for ambient listening. There's some pretty established use cases as it relates to imaging and those kinds of things. So probably a boring answer, but we're just looking for things that are going to be tried and true for the most part. And we really aren't going to be super out there risking anything because we really can't afford to at that level. So.
Well, I was going to say, that's where we are. And people ask me, and there's so many startups today, we're trying to cut through, and I don't have the resources right now to evaluate all these people. It sounds interesting, but, you know, there's a couple thousand vendors that were at HIMSS, and probably next year, more than half of them won't exist anymore. So,
Lindsay, any thoughts there?
I'll share one quick story that I learned about from talking with someone a few months ago. And they broke out three people from their normal IT governance and said, you're going to be my AI SWAT team. And that group was responsible for monitoring success and making buy decisions of AI software. And they were very non-typical governance people. They purposely chose two physicians who love to do research. Then you don't have to be a research facility. They just love to publish and do research. Because those physicians, not having a big interest in IT, knew how to set up a program to evaluate clinical success. So they got the AI, clinical AI pieces, and the other person was from finance. And they set up kind of really short research projects around what is my criteria for success? What were the outcomes? How did this happen? And treated it almost like a clinical research study, but looking at the evaluation of that software. And I thought that was really clever because those two physicians in that example were objective. They didn't have a dog in the hunt, and they knew how to look at data to say, was this a positive effect, neutral, or negative? And because of that, you know, the CIO kind of got a bigger voice in it without just trying to convince through the politics that this wasn't a good idea. So, you know, for what it's worth, I think it just shared that. I thought it was a really unique approach to something that people are just dealing with all of that AI noise. So,
excellent. We're going to do a little lightning round here. 30 seconds of final thought, best piece of advice. I always put it this way to someone in a comparable position at a comparable sized health system, being asked to do as much as they've been doing or even more with less. Your best piece of advice, James, we'll go to you first.
So understand the business that you're in. We've had a lot of turnover over the years. And one of the things that I've often seen is a lot of the IT jobs that people do in the department can be done elsewhere. Spend the time teaching the healthcare business the basics to them. They need to understand order sets. They need to understand the basics of coding, registration. Because when they do that, then they're able to make much more meaningful changes and recommendations to streamline that, clean up the workflow, and clean up the operations. So we're developing kind of a healthcare for dummies. Hopefully no trademark there, but kind of something that says, this is how they do this. This is what we mean. Because I found I'm sitting in meetings with managers and sometimes even directors who don't understand some of the basic concepts because they've been promoted very quickly, and especially seeing that over the last 3 or 4 years.
Very good, Brian.
Well, first of all, I love that because I always tell people that if you can hire the aptitude, you can teach them some of the other stuff. And I love that. I love teaching them. That's a great idea. Kind of repetitive, but just understand what the business is requiring, be in alignment with the business and solve business problems. That's essentially what I would say. And I mean, an IT should be considered where we can be a force multiplier. And I would say there are many cases where that's not the case. So I think to the best of your abilities, demonstrate where you can spend a dollar on IT and turn it into more than a dollar is I think where things should be focused on within the business. And I think that will allow, again, maybe an increased investment in IT and maybe an overall decrease in expenses for the organization.
Very good. And Lindsay, we'll give you the last word.
Well, I think all of our experiences have taught us the same thing, right? Great IT departments are focused on business relationship management. They're focused on their customers, patients, and families, and they're very good at financial discipline. You can figure out all the other IT stuff. The great ones are made up of those.
Excellent. That was a tremendous, tremendous conversation. A lot of topics we couldn't even get to in our hour, but I think we covered a lot of good stuff. Regarding continuing education, you could use the final slide in this deck. You'll get an email when the on-demand recording of this event is ready for viewing. If you want to work with us, you can reach out to Nancy Wilcox from our team. You go to our website to register for upcoming panels. With that, I want to thank our tremendous panel, Brian Strood, James Wellman, Lindsay Jarrell, and special guest Todd Richardson, right? CIO legend who's now retired and in a cabin somewhere, either fishing or hunting. If you know him, you know that's what Todd's up to. And HealthLink Advisors for sponsoring and making this very useful conversation possible. And you for attending. With that, everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.